Dr. Daniels is the president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer at York College. He's the former ED of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Dr. Daniels, welcome back to WBAI. It's been a couple of months, but we're happy to have you back with us.
Well, I'm happy to be here with you this morning.
Dr. Daniels, let's just start here asking you to give your comments and your thoughts about this decision that was just handed down yesterday.
I felt comfortable, which is, I guess, speaks to my lunacy, that there would be an indictment in this particular case. Because I could not imagine how, and they were replaying it, and as we were coming up to the verdict, I mean, this seemed to be just clear. And by the way, there's a major demand that we have body cams, and well, this wasn't a body cam that the police officer had, but this was clearly captured on videotape. And for a chokehold that has been banned by the police department, that was clearly administered, and for someone for a minor infraction like this to end up dead, it seemed to me was clear that there would be some kind of charge in this case. So I got to say, I was absolutely shocked and appalled. I mean, I was just breathless that this occurred in this manner. And it just speaks to, I guess, many, many things. Number one, which is similar to Ferguson, is the prosecution and the grand jury system. Because when my wife and I were talking about it, she said, well, Ron, it's Staten Island. But, the prosecutor didn't want there to be a indictment in this case. First of all, prosecutors could outright have brought charges in the first place. So to punt to the grand jury, I mean, that's kind of a way of punting to the grand jury. The same thing happened in Ferguson. And as this happened in Ferguson, you're looking at for probable cause so it can go to a jury so there can be a jury trial. Well, how you present the evidence to the grand jury will often determine its outcome. And if you determine it in a way that is it has a certain inherent bias to it, towards the police officer, then the grand jury is going to come out a verdict that you really want, which, by the way, speaks to something that we have heard reverberate and echoed again in Ferguson. But it's happened time and time again here in the city of New York. Independent prosecutor, special prosecutor, because the relationship between prosecutors and the police is too close. It's too cozy. It's like asking the fox to watch the hen house. Again, you see the similarities and also that which is broken in this overall process.
Dr. Daniels, Ed Morales here. I'd just like to ask you whether you think this represents a big problem for the relationship between the mayor and the police commissioner, in the sense that probably a big political reason for this failure to indict is that it would be an indictment of the practices of the police department in general.
Well, I do think there's some issue there in a couple of ways. I think that there, and by the way, let me just say that there are significant kinds of changes that have been made, some that were just announced within the last 48 hours that I think are positive. I think the whole reduction in the use of stop and frisk is obviously a positive sign. But here's what's broken that Bratton has not backed away from, and that is the broken windows, quality of life, theory of policing, that was pioneered by, or at least he may not have been the pioneer, but he certainly vigorously used it, and that was by Giuliani. This whole notion that minor infractions lead to major infractions, and so therefore the suspicion that Eric Garner was selling untaxed cigarettes was the basis for his being arrested in the first place, which is really nonsense, because officers have the discretion, they have judgment as to whether to do or not to do. But this broken windows theory is what's broken in the sense that it makes no sense to me, and it never has, you have stopped the squeegee people, you do this and so forth and so on, because that's going to stop people from doing violent crimes and so forth and so on. So Bratton is still defending that, and I think that has to change. And when I say that, I also want to get to something that we in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century have been saying over and over again, and that is, Eric Garner, let's say he was selling untaxed cigarettes. Fact of the matter is, well, let me not to say the fact of the matter, because I don't know the current data. But certainly a couple of years ago, the Community Service Society under David Jones put out a study that indicated that when you looked at black unemployment in the city of New York for black men, the rate of unemployment was somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% for African Americans and somewhere in the neighborhood of 40% for Latinos. That is a state of emergency by any definition. So we've got to. So the issue becomes, why are we in a situation where people are finding desperate ways in order to survive? I mean, if we want to talk about quality of life, that is a quality of life issue. And so to look at policing as a way of dealing with petty crime rather than talking about the quality of life in terms of enhancing and enriching it by investment in terms of jobs and education and economic development is totally perverted. And we've consistently, therefore, at the national level and throughout our discussion, when we marched on the Justice Department year before last, we said end the war on drugs, invest in America's dark ghettos, because that's the other side of the equation. So big changes have to be made in terms of policing, and I think some changes are being made. For example, you know, the whole issue of, you know, continually arresting people who have mental health issues, which the de Blasio administration announced within the last, 48 hours. Because what has happened in this environment is that Rikers Island has been being used as a substitute for mental health facilities. I mean, again, it's a whole function also of this small government disinvesting in American, I mean, in our communities.
Absolutely.
Notion, which we have to push back against. And also, what has not gotten the attention, the diversion of people from minor crimes away from the criminal justice system into other kinds of things. That's a positive kind of direction. So I think there are some things that are moving in the right direction. But independent prosecutors is a key. You can't allow a prosecutor that's so cozy with the police to be the ones who present these cases to the grand jury.
And we're speaking with Dr. Ron Daniels, the president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. Dr. Daniels, I wonder if you might comment on the president and the summit that he had just day before yesterday, I believe it was. And do you think this is a small beginning, a small opening to a national dialogue on these issues that have been plaguing us, well, you know, forever?
Well, these young brothers, these young leaders, and that's what they are, these young leaders in the streets are compelling and pushing this nation to the level of national dialogue that needs to be happening. And, you know, we have a series of things that we talk about at the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, one of which was the call for a national commission on policing, which the president has essentially put in place. But let me just tell you what I think is the problem here. You see, we do have to make this, it has to rise to the level of a moral and political crisis. America needs to see this, because you got to ask yourself, why does this keep happening? I mean, these are the same issues we were confronting when I was executive director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, and that's been, I left there in 2005. I was there for 12 years. I mean, the same sets of issues. So that means that something is wrong. So what I would have hoped the president would have done was to have given an address to the nation, or at least a special press conference in which he announced that the summit was going to take, in which he announced that there was going to be the special task force. So he did it. But the manner in which he did it, in a way, diluted the impact of it. So I'm happy that he's doing it. I think those are correct steps. I think Eric Holder is moving in a way that's very effective to the limits of his power. I mean, the whole thing about issuing new guidelines or dealing with the issue of racial profiling, he has independently talked about how to deal with the demilitarization of the police. These things are all going in the right direction. But these young people in the streets, who are acting so brilliantly and magnificently and so strongly, that they are compelling this nation to examine itself in relationship to what I call the unfinished civil rights, human rights agenda. And the policing patterns are simply a mirror or simply a symptom of that which has not been completed in terms of creating just and wholesome communities in our nation.
Yeah, I think it's really important to go after the root causes. I mean, absolutely, that is something that's continually brushed aside. But, you know, what really impacted me was the idea that, you know, the video itself is a spectacle of not only the officer who is gave the chokehold. There are all these other officers there who also did not intervene or try to stop. And then we've also forgotten.
Did they not intervene?
Yeah.
They participated.
Right.
It was like a Simi Valley, the scene in Simi Valley. It was like a Rodney King. I mean, they brutalized
right.
this man. They have one person with his hand or knee on his head.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, and by the way, let's look, is this someone who was committed, who had a gun, who had a knife, who was alleged to have created some heinous crime? And even then, by the way, there is still a way in which you arrest people. You don't take out your venom. You're a professional. You're a police. This is not me acting out of my own emotion.
Dr. Daniels, I want to just ask you to pause right there because I want to just highlight this issue here and what you just said. In East Orange, it's about a month ago now, there was an incident where East Orange police officers, an East Orange police officer was shot in his stomach area. He wasn't injured. He was injured, but he wasn't mortally wounded by a felon, by a suspect. The East Orange police officers chased this individual down and secured an arrest of somebody that shot a police officer. He was only rescued, he's only survived because of his bulletproof vest. But they chased him down and secured an arrest. I just can't even believe that. I wanted to talk about it then, didn't get a chance to do it then. But hey, they secured an arrest. So this can be done.
Of course it can be done. And it really goes to, again, these ingrained police attitudes. So if you saw, and certainly this is not a generalized indictment, but I was just watching because I was on the train yesterday and I came in and I immediately began to watch coverage. And Charles Blow, who is a very reasonable brother, you know, who often uses graphs and all kinds of things to sort of illustrate his points and so forth. He was on with Michaela Angela Brown. And then there was someone who was supposed to be one of the more progressive police officers, I guess, on the air. And I don't remember his name. But Michaela Angela Brown said something about the sort of the culture of policing and the biases that are there that sometimes lead to these outcomes. And so this officer went absolutely ballistic. I mean, he couldn't stop and listen and to understand the perspective of what he found it necessary to just vigorously defend and say, I don't know what you're talking. He sounded like Charles Barkley, frankly. I'm like, you know, well, no, I mean, there's no such thing. And this broad brush thing, and he missed the point completely. And that's the problem. Much of white America misses the point. I guess even some people in black America miss the point that the way in which people are policed in the black community and Latino communities is different than happens in most communities. Eric Garner in the white community most likely would have been approached, most likely, because there are exceptions to this pattern, but in general terms would have been approached and said, look, you're not supposed to do this, man. We cut it out and move on.
Mm-hmm. Take a while.
There are other things that the police officers have to do, and then there's also discretion. They have a judgment to decide to use force, not to use force, to apply it. Because he also was saying, you guys are harassing me. They obviously, he's been arrested 30 times, probably arrested 30 times for the same petty nonsense, which is ridiculous. And let me just speak to this issue of discretion for a moment. Now, what do you think? Because every one of the demonstrations in the streets of New York last night were unlawful. They didn't have permits. So by the narrow definition of the law, you could have cracked down and you could have said, you're in the streets unlawful. We're going to arrest you. They didn't do that, which was the correct decision. That was because you have a law does not mean you have to use your judgment in how you apply the law. And so had they cracked down on the demonstrators last night who were using civil disobedience, blocking traffic, I mean, this is major stuff here. But they made a decision, essentially to guide them somewhat. They in fact, were among the crowd. They were. That's exactly what the police should have done, protect the right of people to express their First Amendment right, even though they were complicit in breaking the law, because the law says you don't do demonstrations without having permits.
Mm.
But that was the wise thing to do. And that's the kind of thing that you got to begin to see within policing in general. And let me just say something else. I heard, and I like Chris Cuomo on CNN. I think he generally does a good job. But we have this reflexive position. Oh, we have the greatest system of policing in the world, but it's not. No.
Mm.
This notion of American exceptionalism has also got to stop. There are other places in the world that we can learn something about in terms of having a just and humane society. And we need to look at some of those examples about how we can therefore transform policing and make it much more effective. And again, I reiterate, at the end of the day, no amount of policing is a substitute for socioeconomic and racial justice. It just won't happen. Instead of looking at how do we create wholesome communities, in wholesome communities, there's far less crime. There will always be some, but far less, and therefore not an excuse to have policing at all, and certainly not the kind of brutal policing and the kind of terrorizing policing that we have experienced for far too long. I mean, from the time we've been on these shores, we've experienced this kind of policing, and again, at every instance, it's at the level of depriving our people of their civil and human rights in this society.
Dr. Daniels, how can people get in touch with you and get in touch with your work at the Institute of the Black World 21st Century?
Well, they can be in touch with us by, again, visiting our website at IBW21.org. That's IBW21.org. We encourage people to visit the site and also sign up for the newsletter so we can continually be in touch with them. And locally, if they want to be in touch with us, they can reach us at 718-429-1415. This is an unfinished project. Mm-hmm. We don't have a more perfect union yet, but it can get there. And this is a part of that process of perfecting the imperfect American union.
Mm. Ron Daniels, Dr. Ron Daniels, you've been really very generous with your time this morning. Thank you so much for being on the broadcast with Ed Morales and myself.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Daniels. Mm-hmm.